VK6ARN, News West. We are a community organisation and we've been serving up the best amateur radio news in Australia since 1931. Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, and welcome to News West for the 25th of February 2024. Now on with the show.
Good morning, campers. The month of May is not far away, and that means it's time to mark on the calendar the third annual Southern Electronics Group Man Up Ham Camping Weekend of the May 17th to 19th. If you haven't been before, ham camping is a casual weekend getaway for hams and other registered HF users like AusTravelNet and VKS737 and their significant others to drag the swag, the van or the tent down to Man Up Sports Ground for a weekend of radio and social activity. There's plenty of room to camp. There's some big trees to throw a line over, hot showers, a camp kitchen, terrific fire pit to sit around after dark, and of course, time to sit and chat over the weekend with like-minded radio enthusiasts. Food and drinking water is BYO. The kitchen and amenities are powered, but there's no power available for campsites. It's been known to rain, fog, and then bright sunshine, often on the same day, so you need to come prepared. Camping is the usual low price of $10 per person per night. There'll be a square card reader on the weekend available and SEG can take online payments. Boyart Brook has a great car museum and other attractions if you want to visit town 15 minutes away while you're here. We maintain a Ham Camption Facebook page for up-to-date information and you can contact me at VK6EK, that's Victor Kilo Sierra India X-Ray Echo Kilo at gmail.com. We hope to see you there. This is Darren, VK6EK, for the Southern Electronics Group.
The John Moyle Memorial Field Day is on the weekend of the 16th and 17th of March. Don't panic, but that's only 3 weeks away. Yes, 3 weeks catches up, doesn't it? But there's time to get organised. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, although the John Moyle is aimed at portable operations, there are categories for both portable and home-based entries, with the rider that multiple operator stations may not enter the home station category. It's worthwhile also to remind you that portable operation is defined as operating with no connection to permanent infrastructure, such as mains, power, or permanently installed antennas. I once operated a portable station for a contest in my backyard, in the back end of my 5 acres, armed with a generator and wire antennas in the trees. Another time I operated from my mobile installation in my car in a car park in South Australia, and I've operated from my caravan parked near a country pub, conveniently, again with wire antennas in the trees and the generator humming in the background. I actually like camping, and that's how I do it if I can. There are some challenges in portable operations, and let's look at some. First, let's look at logging. Contests need good logs. There may perhaps be people who still prefer paper logs, but good luck to them. Paper logs are more work than electronic logs. The best software for contests runs on computers, and laptops are the go. There are two main contenders for which software to use. The first is VK Contest Logger, and the other one is N1MM, November 1 Mike Mike, which is a high-powered, multifunctional software used by serious contesters, and if you're a sometimes or first contester, N1MM is probably not for you, simply because of its complexity, the need to load in configurations for each contest, and a steeper learning curve. The best Aussie contest logger for many people is called VK Contest Logger, or VKCL for short. It's compact software, it's intuitive to use, and has the Aussie contest rules built in. And you can submit your log in seconds with a few clicks. Furthermore, if you're a multi-operator station, VK Contest Logger can be used across a network. I won't go into how to set it up on a network, but it's there if you want to explore it. VK Contest Logger is free. Just Google VK Contest Logger, VKCL, and download it. Everyone's got their own ideas about what sort of antenna is best for portable operation. For HF, I've always used wire antennas supported by trees. I use a fishing rod with a 3-ounce sinker to cast a line over the trees, then pull back a 4mm nylon rope. The nylon rope is strong enough to support your antennas. This method allows me to place antennas quite high up off the ground. I use a multi-band antenna for HF, lots of wire in the air, one feed line to the rig. Simple and effective. My choice these days is a doublet or a V-beam. Same construction, different wire length, both fed with a ladder line into the back of the antenna tuning unit. With regard to your power supply, I'm assuming that if you have batteries, solar panels, and maybe a generator, that you know how to set them up and how to safely use them. Now let's briefly talk about strategy. You can learn a lot by looking at the report on last year's John Moyle contest. You'll find it at the WIA's website. Take a look at where all the points were earned last year. On HF, the big points earners in 2023 and in 2022 were 20 metres, 40 metres and 80 metres. On the higher frequencies, the big points earners were 6 metres, 2 metres and 70 centimetres. And you may be surprised to hear that 23 centimetres was also in there. And at a guess, I'd say that the 23 centimetre result was the result of well-organised groups of operators within a defined geographical area. And good on them. That's being strategic and it's collaboration. Looking at the big earning bands, it makes a lot of sense to put in your effort where you'll get the results. You don't need to ignore other bands, but let's put the effort in where the points are. It is, after all, a contest. So good luck with your John Moyle Memorial Field Day preparations. Only 3 weeks, folks. Don't panic. But it's 3 weeks and it's on 16th and 17th of March. And it starts at 9 a.m. on Saturday. So you have to get on your bike and get things ready to start. I'm Bob Vickay, 6PAP.
If you happen to listen to the right part of the 80 metre band on a Tuesday evening, you might hear something that sounds like this. The CQQRS net has been running every single Tuesday for the last 2 years and has been unbelievably popular. There are usually half a dozen, and a couple of times up to 18 stations, popping in and out when they can over the 4 or 5 hours. The aim is to encourage new CW operators to have a go at slow CW in a safe and really friendly environment, where slow speed and lots of mistakes are par for the course. It's all about having a go, starting with a basic call sign and RST exchange, then over time getting better and better. The net also attracts its fair share of old-timers who enjoy helping others to have a go or just to enjoy the banter. So this might be just the opportunity you've been waiting for to have a go at transmitting on CW, or perhaps just to stop the contacts rusting up on your key. Doesn't matter whether you're brand new to the code or if you're an old-timer who would like to have a bit of fun and help encourage new operators by having simple, safe QSOs at their speed, we'd love to have you join in. The net starts at 0900 Zulu every Tuesday on 80 metres between 3540 and 3570 kilohertz, and there's stations in the west, east and in between listening out for your CQQRS call. For more information and to receive our weekly CQQRS RagChew newsletter, contact me, Mark, VK6QI, via my email address on qrz.com, or you can email me direct, mark.bosma@icloud.com. That is mark.bosma@icloud.com. Too much switch mode power supply hash on 80 metres? This might be the incentive to do something about it. With a cheap noise canceller costing less than $100, 80 metres could be easier than you think. So once again, Tuesdays from 0900 Zulu until late, between 3540 kHz and 3570 kHz. Cheers from Mark, VK2KI and VK6QI.
Hi, just a little note about VK6RRG and the WAG Technical and General Net. Having it run every Sunday morning on VK6RLM, that's 146.750 or Channel 3 in the old money. And it starts at 10:30 a.m. this morning. Of course, if you're listening in the evening, it's next week.
This is News West. your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. A few weeks ago, I discovered that the regulations for amateur radio in Australia had some definitions that caused me to wonder if 2,312 amateurs in VK, me among them, had been operating illegally. Specifically, it appeared that using a whisper or weak signal propagation reported transmitter of any kind, both computer-controlled and standalone beacons, was contrary to what was permitted in the rules, since in Australia an amateur beacon station means a station in the amateur service that is used principally for the purpose of identifying propagation conditions. The rules go on to say that you must have a specific beacon license, and not having one is not permitted. I suggested that it was time to send a letter to the regulator seeking clarification. Well, let me tell you, that set a cat among the pigeons. Not at the regulator, but within the amateur community. Between posting a draft of my proposed email to a local mailing list before sending it to the regulator and publishing my article, I received responses that ranged from, "Let sleeping dogs lie. You are now on their radar. You will be prosecuted because you admitted to breaking the rules. Carry on and ignore the rules because I am," and plenty more in that same vein. There were two amateurs that indicated curiosity about what the response might be, while pointing out that none of this was legally binding since it hadn't been tested in court. I also discussed the matter on my weekly net, and I learned that DMR hotspots come in a duplex version, meaning that what you transmit into the hotspot is also transmitted by the hotspot on RF whilst sending it to the internet. If you've been paying attention, you'll notice that this fits the definition of an amateur repeater station, which also requires a specific license. I received a prompt reply from the Australian Communications and Media Authority, the ACMA, the Australian regulator. Here's what the regulator had to say in response to my query. Quote, "I can confirm that you can continue to operate your whisper beacon and duplex hotspot as described without requiring an amateur beacon or repeater license." End quote. It goes on to say, quote, "Operation of these types of amateur equipment is permitted under the current amateur non-assigned arrangements and, as such, will continue to be permitted under the class license arrangements." End quote. As a result, if you've been listening to Whisper on 10 metres, you'll have discovered that my 10 dBm beacon went back on the air 45 minutes after receiving this information. The letter confirms that both Whisper and Duplex hotspots have previously been, and will continue to be, allowed under the new rules from the 19th of February 2024, when they come into effect. The final paragraph from the regulator sets out the boundaries of where the rules apply. It says, quote, "The definitions in the interpretation determination are broad definitions of amateur repeaters and beacons. For the purposes of amateur licensing, the ACMA only considers apparatus assigned license services where individual frequency coordination is carried out and specific licenses are issued, to be amateur repeaters and beacons." End quote. In my opinion, this is significant because you only need to apply for a separate amateur beacon or repeater license in very specific circumstances related to frequency coordination. It makes me wonder if the local beacon operators require an ongoing license for all of their beacons or not. What I learned from this process is that there is a high level of fear in the amateur community towards the regulator. I do not know where this originates, since I've interacted with the regulator on dozens of occasions since obtaining my amateur license in 2010. And in every case, the response was courteous and informative. When the response wasn't what I expected, I replied asking for extra clarification and received it. This inquiry was no different. Going back through decades of old publications, I've previously seen letters between the community and the regulator, and I have yet to see anything that warrants the level of fear that appears to permeate our community. So, why are we afraid of the regulator, and why do we keep spreading that fear to anyone within propagation range? What have they ever done to you? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima, Alpha Bravo.
Hi, I'm Steve, AK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know? Earlier this month, I had the pleasure of going to the Pargfest down in Mandurah. Big thanks to the Peel Amateur Radio Group for holding it. It was a great event with lots of vendors, clubs showing their wares, raffles, door prizes, great food, etc. It was great to see just about, if not all, of the clubs in the greater Perth area supporting the event as well. Another thing I thought was really interesting was the amount of young people attending the event, both licensed and not yet. Peel Amateur Radio Group are actively encouraging new hams into the hobby, and I saw a few others being taken under an experienced wing from other clubs also, and afterwards, in my capacity at Ham College, also received a few expressions of interest in our courses from the same kids. I see quite a few new hams come into the hobby from Ham College from all walks of life. I think our youngest foundation license attendee was 8 years old, but I could be wrong, could be younger than that a few years back. And we've had quite a few attendees in their 70s come through the college successfully as well. As a proud father of a couple of hams as well, I see that what interested me both now and as a younger ham in the late 70s and early 80s is completely different to what interests our younger generation. And it is different, not better or worse. For us children of the 70s, without the internet, where the world was about the size of the city you lived in, and talking to your grandma in the eastern states, wherever that is, was something you did on Christmas Day and birthdays. Talking to someone on the other side of the world was just wondrous. Now this is old hat, although I and plenty of others still get a kick out of talking to someone in the EU with a piece of wire and 100 watts. To younger people, I can imagine this is less wondrous, but talking to the space station or bouncing a signal off the moon or exploring a new digital radio technology is much more fun. Coupled with the fact that younger people tend to use text more than voice calls on a phone, so using a radio with low power and a simple antenna on FT8 is something they find very cool. Funnily enough, most of the younger hams I've met seem to have far more interest in the technical side of the hobby than I had at that age. While I spent my career as a radio technician, on amateur radio I've always been more of a communicator, more interested in getting a QSL card from Clipperton Island than about exploring a new modulation technique. I think these differences are something to be celebrated. Instead of our hobby becoming less and less relevant to society, new people coming into the hobby are finding lots of ways to explore the technology and have fun. The sheer volume of different ways to enjoy our hobby compared to what we had in the 70s is just breathtaking, and part of why I think the amateur population in WA is actually growing, or at least not shrinking. So how do we attract more people to the hobby? Let's face it, once we middle-aged hams like myself are in our 70s, if we're still the youngsters in the hobby, who's going to help us put up a new Yagi or tower? Better start recruiting some new slaves. Oh, sorry, I meant new members. Well, most of us have families, so there's a start. Maybe there's a neighbour who's curious about the funny-looking antenna in your yard. Maybe clubs could start doing some work on their websites to attract more local members from the general public. Most clubs have at least one or two web gurus. Maybe look at some search engine optimization to increase the audience of your website. Is it a good advert for your club? Scouts and guides are another great source of new members. JOTA is the perfect time to show younger people the fun of the hobby and encourage them to think about getting a license. Most, if not all, clubs here have at least a few people who are registered examiners. Talk to your local scout groups about running a foundation course. Great way to recruit new members. And instead of dragging your old radios to yet another hamfest to sell for $10, think about giving it to a newly licensed ham in your club. There are lots of things we can do in our own worlds to increase interest in the hobby, encourage you all to think about this and maybe even bring it up as a discussion point at your next club meeting. Thanks for listening. This is Steve, VK6SJ, and you are listening to News West.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Hi, it's Bob, VK6POP again. I forgot to mention in my previous talk about John Moyle that I'll be operating a station from a bush camp about 25 kilometres southeast of the lakes. If anybody else would like to join me, I'm happy to turn it into a multiple operator station. It's a bush camp, nothing provided except bush, so you have to come prepared for self-contained camping. Bring your own everything, absolute everything. Caravans can't get in there, an off-road camper can do. It's a great spot, so get in touch with me by email is a good one. Send it to my WA Amateur Radio News email address, president@vk6.net. That's easier to remember, president@vk6.net. And we can use the club call sign if it's a multiple operator station. We did last year. I think there was only two of us, but we came something like sixth in Australia, so that's not bad. Anyway, that's me.
You may notice that News West has been light on for content lately, and I've been playing a lot of repeat stories, but you can help us to change that by sending your stories or contributions through to newswest@vk6.net.
G'day from WARG, and welcome to WARG News for Sunday, the 25th of February. Now, you might know that WARG meet on the first Monday of the month, unless the first Monday is a holiday. Well, in March, this is the case, and so the meeting for March will not be on the 4th, but on the 11th. So the next meeting of WARG will be held at the Pelican Point Sea Scout Hall on the 11th of March. Doors open around 7 for a 7:30pm start. Tea, coffee and bickies are available, with time to catch up with friends both before and after the meeting. Now for your GPSs, the hall is located at number 12 Australia 2 Drive in Crawley, all the way to the very end and sharp left. If you've been listening, you'd know that WARG had a presentation in February by longtime Perth identity Robin VK6XRE on repeater trunking and an overview of the state of wide area emergency comms in WA. Well, this talk was so well received that there will be a follow-up presentation in coming months, expanding from this talk, and I'll let you know more when it's coming up. In the meantime, whilst the surroundings of Camp Cornwall are beautiful year-around, don't arrive expecting a meeting on the 4th, because it's the 11th. Ciao from VK6RRG.
Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, back with you. And did you know that News West is now on YouTube? Type in youtube.com/@NewsWestWeeklyPodcast-Kilo. Zulu 7 Yankee Charlie. Oh, and before I go, I'd like to thank those watching on YouTube or ATV, the readers, and you for listening. I'd also like to thank our team, the broadcasters, and those submitting content each week. Please stand by now for callbacks after the broadcast, or head over to the VK6.net website and fill out the form so we know how many people are listening each week.